Wait. My hands grapple for the rope at my waist. Hey! All of our heads turn to see Hammy's mech hurtling toward us. She brings her legs down hard into the water, sending waves pummeling over the bridges. The hanger on her mech's head flies open, and out shoots Hammy in a blur of motion, suspended in the rain in a flying leap. She holds up a bright green power-up she'd grabbed earlier. Then she flings it at Shahira. An explosion lights up the end of my mech's arm, just shy of where Shahira is running. She skids to a halt, but the blast still throws Shahira off her feet and sends her flying through the air. On our other side, Franco's mech comes charging through the water, bent against the strengthening winds. Hammy! I shout, but it's too late. Franco grabs Hammy with one mech arm, closes the fist, and throws her. She goes flying through the air, landing with a splash in the churning open ocean beyond the wall. With his other hand, Franco catches Shahira and saves her from her fall. Asher's mech is moving fast now, fist raised at Franco. I stop running for a second to duck down. I see Asher soar high over me, his mech's eye a distant scarlet dot high in the sky. He smashes hard into Franco's side. The impact knocks me to my knees. Water slams into me as the waves from Asher's landing pour over the ruined arm of my mech. I wipe water from my eyes and look up. Franco strikes back against Asher, each blow a deafening crunch of metal. In the midst of everything, I find Shahira. She is racing up Franco's arm toward Asher's mech. I run in her direction. Need a lift? Roshan's voice comes on in my comms. I turn, just long enough to see his fist come from nowhere, scooping me up and closing around me. His mech is flying, his metal blade wings beating so hard that they form a whirlpool in the lake's water. I soar through the air to where Franco and Asher are locked in a death grip. Nearby, Evo's mech comes hurtling toward us, aiming straight for Roshan. We're almost there. Let me go, I call to Roshan, banging my fist against the inside of his palm. He does as I say and drops me. I fall toward Asher's shoulders. At the same time, Shahira reaches his opposite shoulder. We both climb. Rain lashes against me, threatening to hurl me into the water. I hang on as tightly as I can and try to climb faster. Franco lands another hard hit against Asher's chest, sending me careening wildly to one side, hanging on by only my arm. I force myself to swing back. Keep going. I reach the top of the mech's head right as Shahira gets to her feet. She runs toward the head's cover. If she gets it open and sees Asher's artifact, she can use the power up on him and we'll lose. I clench my jaw and force myself onto my feet. Then I sprint toward her. Everything seems to happen in slow motion. Shahira pulls the head's cover open. She raises her hand to use the power up. I reach her, throwing myself at her with every ounce of strength I have. My hands close on the power-up. I yank it out of her Zero's grasp right as she is about to use it. Do it now. I turn my view's focus on Shahira's artifact. Before she can stop me, I aim the power-up at her and throw. Her eyes widen. The power-up bursts into a ball of black smoke, engulfing both of us. Through the darkness, Shahira's ruby artifact appears in my hand. My fingers close around it at the same time I run my deactivation hack. It sparks wildly, streaks of electricity whipping out from it in every direction. Then, a split second later, it turns black. Mine! Game over! The audience explodes into chaotic noise all around us. The sound is deafening, drowning out anything and everything. It's all done, the announcer's voice shouts over the noise, mired in confusion. But hang on, folks. What happened in the arena today? This is an unprecedented hack of the final tournament. We are standing by for more. It's all done. I clench the artifact like my life depends on it. That's it. Is that it? A choked laugh breaks out of me, and all the energy rushes out of my chest. Asher's voice has come on through my earpiece, and he is shouting something ecstatically, but I can't understand what he's saying. I can't concentrate on anything except the fact that the game is over. Then, something strange happens. A jolt of electricity sparks through me, like a static shock. I jump. A unified gasp ripples through the audience, too, as if everyone had felt it at the exact same time. Numbers and data flicker over each of the players, in and out, then gone. What was that? I stand there, blinking for an instant, unsure of what just happened. A feeling of dread hits me. In front of me, Shahira's avatar vanishes, replaced by Zero, his dark armor and opaque helmet black under the stormy sky. He stares at me. "You triggered it," he says. His voice is low, furious. "Triggered what? You're done," I shout at him. "And so is your plan." Something about my words seems to surprise Zero. "You don't know." "Don't know? Know what?" He straightens. "My plan," he says, "was to stop Hideo." Chapter 30. What? I shake my head, not understanding. But before I can reply, Zero vanishes as the Technica world around us freezes and fades into black. When I blink again, I'm back in my hotel room, and the games are done. I sit for a moment, startled by the silence. It's all over so suddenly. I'd done it, and even though I still haven't figured out who Zero is, I know that I've stopped his plans, whatever they happen to be.
"You don't know. My plan was to stop Hideo."
What the hell is that supposed to mean? What don't I know? Something tugs at the back of my mind, a nagging little worry. As if on cue, a message pops up in my view. It's Asher. I accept it, and his familiar face appears, as if he's in the room with me, his expression elated.
"Emmy!" he exclaims. "You did it! We won!"
I manage a smile at him and mutter something back, but Zero's words run through my head.
"Where are you?"
It's a message from Hideo.
"I'll call you back, Ash,"
I say, then end the call and type back to Hideo in a fog. If I can just see him in person, he'll be able to explain away what Zero had said. I'll tell him all about it, and he'll know what Zero was referring to. Barely a half hour later, my door opens, and I look up to see Hideo walk into my room, flanked by his bodyguards. He shakes his head once at them, and they stop immediately in unison, obeying so quickly that it is as if they were programmed to do it. Then they turn and go outside, leaving us alone. I haven't seen Hideo in several days, not in person, and my heart leaps immediately in response to his presence. I hop to my feet. He can explain what's going on. Hideo stops a foot away from me and gives me a strange, solemn frown.
"I told you to leave."
Something in his gaze makes me pause. Zero's words come back to me, suspended in the air between us. "Zero was in the game," I say. "He'd rigged the artifacts with a virus. He said something to me before he disappeared. That he was here to stop your plans." I frown. "I don't understand what he means." Hideo stays silent. "I mean," I go on, now afraid to stop talking. "I thought his plans were to trigger a destruction of the Neuralink, maybe hurt everyone connected to it, but I didn't know why he wanted that." I stare at Hideo, suddenly dreading his answer. Do you know?
Adeo bows his head. His brows are furrowed, and everything about his posture screams of his reluctance to reply.
Zero can't be right, can he? What do I not know?
What is he talking about?
I say, my voice soft now.
Hideo finally looks at me again. It is a haunted expression. The boy of curiosity and playfulness, hidden now beneath a veil. It's the same seriousness I always see on his face. But this is the first time I feel a sense of foreboding from it. Like it's more than just the expression of a quiet creator. After a while, he sighs and runs his hand through his hair. A familiar screen appears between us. Link with Hideo?
Let me show you, he says.
I hesitate. Then I tap to accept the invite. A trickle of Hideo's emotions open to me as our link establishes. He's wary, weighed down by something. But he's optimistic, too. Optimistic about what?
We are always searching for a way to improve our lives with machines, Hideo says, with data. For a while now, I've been working on developing the perfect artificial intelligence, an algorithm that, when implemented through the Neuralink, can fix our flaws better than any human police force.
I frown at him. Fix our flaws? What are you talking about?
Hideo brings up a new screen between us with a subtle wave of his hand. It looks like an oval of colors, greens and blues, yellows and purples, all constantly shifting.
You're looking inside the mind of a Neuralink user, he explains.
Then he swipes again. The oval is replaced with another one, with its own shifting colors.
And another user.
He swipes yet again.
And another.
I stare, incredulous. These are all the minds of your users? You can see into their thoughts? Their brains?
I can do more than just see. The Neuralink has always interfaced with the human brain, Hideo continues. That is what makes its virtual reality so efficient and so realistic. That's what made the glasses special. You knew this. Until now, I used that interface as a one-way information system. The code simply created and displayed what your brain wished. You move your arm, the code moves your virtual arm. Your brain is the one in control. He gives me a pointed look. But information travels both ways.
I struggle to comprehend the truth of what he's saying. Hideo's invention uses the world's best 3D effects generator, your own brain, to create for you the most incredible illusion of reality ever. The world's best brain-computer interface. I shake my head, not wanting to believe his words. What are you trying to say?
Hideo looks at me for a long moment before he answers.
The end of the game, he says, activated the Neuralink's ability to control its users' minds.
The Neuralink can control its users. The realization hits me so hard and fast that I can barely breathe. Users are supposed to be able to control the Neuralink with their minds. But that can also be used the other way. Type in a command and use that to tell the brain what to do. Type in enough commands and the brain can be permanently controlled. And Hideo has created an entire algorithm to do this. I take a step back, steadying myself against the side table.
You are controlling how people think, I say.
With code?
Those Warcross lenses were free. Hideo reminds me, they have been shipped to nearly every person in the world, in almost every corner of the globe. The news stories of long lines of shipments of stolen lenses. Now I understand why Hideo wasn't worried about stolen shipments. The more given out, the better. Hideo brings up another image of the inside of a user's mind. This time, the oval's colors look deep red and purple. The Neuralink can tell when a user's emotions shift to anger, he says. It can tell when they are plotting something violent, and it knows this with incredible accuracy. He shifts our view to the actual person behind this specific mind. It's a person struggling to pull a handgun out of his coat, his forehead matted with sweat as he prepares to hold up a convenience store. Is this happening right now? I manage to say. Hideo nods once. Downtown Los Angeles. Right as the person reaches the convenience store entrance, the dark red oval representing his mind suddenly flares, flashing bright. As I look on, the Neuralink's new algorithm resets the colors. The deep scarlet turns into a mild mix of blues, greens, and yellow. On the live view, the man freezes. He stops pulling out his gun. There is a strange blankness on his face that sends a shiver through me. Then, as his face calms, he blinks out of it, exits, and moves on down the street, the convenience store forgotten. Hideo shows me other videos of events all happening simultaneously around the world. The color maps of billions of minds, all controlled by an algorithm. As time goes on, Hideo says, the code will adapt to each person's mind. It will fine-tune itself, improve itself, adding to its automated responses every specific detail about what a person might do. It will turn itself into a perfect security system. Judging from the footage, people don't even know what had hit them. And even if they had, the code will stop them from thinking about it now. What if people don't want this? What if they just stop using the Neuralink and their lenses? Remember what I told you when I first gave you a set of them? I recall his words at the same time he says this. The lenses leave behind a harmless film on the eye's surface that is only one atom thick. This film acts as a conduit between the lenses and your body. That lingering film on the eyes will keep someone connected to the Neuralink, even when they take the lenses out. I'd understood Zero's plans all wrong. He had wanted to destroy this with the virus and those rigged artifacts. He had wanted to assassinate Hideo to stop him from moving forward. He had bombed our dorms in an attempt to keep me out of the games and from carrying out Hideo's final goal. And maybe this is why Hideo had not stopped the final game when he saw that things were going wrong. He'd wanted me to stop Zero so that I could trigger his plans. He's doing this because of Sasuke. He created all of this so that no one would ever have to suffer the same fate as his brother. That no family would ever go through what his did. Our conversation comes back to me in a flash. You created Warcross for him, I'd said. And he'd responded, everything I do is for him. Does Ken know about this plan? Was everyone always in on it? You can't, I finally say, hoarse. My question doesn't stir him. Why not? Hideo asks. You can't be serious. I let out a single, desperate, humorless laugh. You want to be a dictator? You want to control everyone in the world? Not me.
Hideo gives me the same piercing stare that I remember from our first meeting.
What if the dictator is an algorithm? A code? What if that code can force the world to be a better place? Can stop wars with a single breath of text? Can save lives with an automated system? The algorithm doesn't have an ego. It doesn't lust after power. It is programmed solely to do right, to be fair. It is the same as the laws that govern our society, except it can also enforce that law immediately, everywhere, all the time.
But you control the algorithm.
His eyes narrow slightly. I do.
No one chose you,
I snap. And have people been so great at choosing their leaders? He snaps back.
But you can't do that. You're taking away something that makes us fundamentally human.
Hideo steps closer. And what is it that makes us human exactly? The choice to kill and rape? To war and bomb and destroy? To kidnap children? To gun down the innocent? Is that the part of humanity that shouldn't be taken away? Has democracy been able to stop any of this? We already try to fight back with laws, but law enforcers cannot be everywhere at once. They cannot see everything. What if I can? I could have stopped the person who stole Sasuke. The Neuralink can stop anyone who might do the same now to another child. I can make 90% of the population crime-free, allowing our law enforcement to focus only on the remaining 10%.
You mean you'll control 90% of the population?
People can still live their lives, pursue their dreams, enjoy their fantasy worlds, do everything they've ever wished to do. I'm not standing in the way of any of that. They can do anything they want, as long as it is not a crime. Nothing in their lives changes except for this, so why not? Everything about Hideo's words seems contradictory, and I find myself standing in the middle, not sure what to believe. I think of my own city, how I have a job as a bounty hunter because the police can no longer keep up with the rising crime in New York. I think of how the same has been happening everywhere. They can do anything they want, as long as it is not a crime. Nothing in their lives changes except for this. Except for giving up their freedom. Except the thing that changes everything. It's an essential part of everyday life, the Neuralink, Hideo says. People work inside it and build businesses on top of it and are engulfed in the entertainment it offers. They want to use it. And I realize that, of course, he's right. Why would anyone give up the perfect fantasy reality just because they have to give up their freedom? What's the point of freedom if you're just living in a miserable reality? It would be like telling everyone to quit using the internet. And even as my skin crawls at the knowledge that I've worn the Neuralink lenses, am still wearing them, I still feel a sharp pang at the thought of never logging back into the link, a reluctance to abandon them. Even without the film against the eyes, people would never stop using it. They probably won't even believe that it's doing this to them. And even if they did start arguing with each other about the implications of the Neuralink's manipulation, their lives now revolve around it. Anyone not logged into the Neuralink right now will use it before long, triggering this new algorithm the instant they do. Eventually, everyone will have this installed in their minds, and that will give Hideo control over each of them. Maybe no one would even care. What about protesters? I press. What about fighting for what's right, or making mistakes, or even just respecting people who disagree with you? Is it going to stop people from passing laws that are unjust? What laws is it going to enforce, exactly? I clench my fists.
How is your artificial intelligence capable of judging everyone in the world or understanding why they do what they do? How do you know you won't go too far? You aren't going to bring about world peace all by yourself.
Everyone pays lip service to world peace, Adeo says. They use it as a pretty answer to pointless questions, to make themselves sound good. His eyes sear me to the core. I'm tired of the horror in the world, so I will force it to end.
I think of the times after my father's death, when I'd picked fights in school or shouted things I later regretted. I think of what I'd done to defend Annie Partridge. Hedaya's code would have stopped me. Would that have been good? Why does it feel like a knife twisting in my chest to know that this is the reason why he flew me to Tokyo? All those warnings from him for me to leave.
You lied to me, I say in a firm voice. I was not the one who attacked you.
Hideo's eyes are soft and steady.
I was not the one who destroyed what was precious to you. There is real evil in the world, and I am not it.
Zero had destroyed the things that mattered most to me. My pieces of the past, my ornament and my father's painting, my memories. Hideo is the one who gave me a way to even store those memories, who saved me from being thrown into the streets, who mourns his brother and loves his family, and creates beautiful things. Zero uses violence to further his cause. Hideo furthers his by preventing violence. Some part of me, some crazy calm part, sees sense in his plan, even as I recoil in disgust.
Hideo sighs and looks away. When I first hired you, all I wanted to do was stop a hacker whom I knew was trying to stop me. I didn't know that...
He hesitates, then abandons the sentence.
I didn't want you to continue working for me without truly understanding the weight of what you were doing.
Yeah. Well, I did keep working for you, and you let me, without telling me why. The times he had hesitated in my presence, reluctant to take us further. The moment when he decided to let me go. My removal from the Phoenix Riders team. He had been trying, in his own way, to go about his plans alone. The lenses I'm wearing feel cold, as if they were something foreign and hostile. I think about the hacked version of Warcross that I use. Am I safe?
Hideo leans close enough for our lips to touch. The part of me that is made of raw instinct stirs, wanting desperately to close that distance between us. His eyes are so dark now, almost black. His expression haunted. Every problem has a solution, doesn't it? I want to prove to you the sense in my plans.
His brows furrow.
I can show you the good in this, if you'll let me. Please.
And through the link, I can sense his earnestness, his burning ambition to do right, his desire to prove it to me. When I search his gaze, I recognize that curious, passionate, intelligent man I'd first seen in his office, showing me his newest creation. This is the same person. How can this be the same person? His expression remains uncertain, unsure.
Don't leave, Emika, he says. I swallow hard. When I respond with my real voice. It is calm now, even cold. I can't support you in this.
I can almost feel his heart crack, stabbed right where he had risked opening it up to me, where he had let me see the beating wound inside. He had confided in me, thinking that perhaps I would be the one person who would side with him. Why wouldn't I? He must have thought. I understood his loss, and he had understood mine. We'd understood each other, or so we'd thought. He looks suddenly alone, vulnerable, even in his determination.
Emika, he says, in one last attempt to convince me. I take a deep breath, then sever the link between us. The subtle stream of his emotions cuts off abruptly. I'm going to stop you, Hideo.
His eyes turn distant. Those familiar walls going up, until he's looking at me in the same way he had during our first meeting. He leans away from me. He studies my face, as if taking it in for the last time.
I don't want to be your enemy, he says quietly. But I'm going to do this, with or without you.
I can feel my own heart breaking, but I stand firm. He does not give, and neither do I. So we continue to stand on opposite sides of a ravine. Then you're going to have to do it alone.
Chapter 31. The streets of Tokyo are still emptier than I've ever seen them. I tear down the road on my board, my hair streaming out behind me, the wind making my eyes water. How complicated everything has become. Not long ago, I had been gliding through the crowded center of New York City, wanting nothing more than to make enough money to keep myself off the streets. Hideo had been a magazine cover then, a glimpse in a news article, a photo in a televised broadcast, a headline in a tabloid. Now he is someone I am struggling to understand. Someone with 1,000 different versions of himself that I am trying to piece together. All around me, the only screaming headlines seem to be accusations that the final championship results were unfair, that the game was compromised by illegal power-ups. Fans are calling for a redo of the match. Conspiracy theories have already sprung up all over fan communities, claiming that some employee had planted the power-ups as a joke, or that Henka Games had wanted to raise their ratings, or that the players had somehow stumbled upon secrets hidden in the final world. If the truth were thrown in there, no one would be able to tell the difference. Everyone else goes about their business without even realizing the subtle, significant shift in the Neuralink that can now control their lives. And is anything different, really? Haven't we all been plugged in for years now? Completely addicted to this world beyond reality? Are we this willing to give up? I force myself to look away as I pass a police car. Can Hideo come after me now by simply telling the police to arrest me? Would he do that to me? When will his patience run out? When will he turn on me completely? I have to find a way to stop him first, before he stops me. I have my old cracked phone out, my hack allowing me to track down the other Phoenix Riders without being subjected to the new Neuralink algorithm. They have holed up in an apartment that I can only assume belongs to Asher, on the outskirts of the city. An incoming message appears on my phone. It's from some encrypted unknown source. Hideo, most likely. I force myself to ignore it, blinking moisture from my eyes as I push my board to its highest speeds along an empty stretch of highway. As the sun starts to set, washing the city in shades of gold, I pull to a stop at a quiet intersection on the outskirts of Tokyo, where the city gives way to hills and sparse streets. I find myself staring at a gated three-story townhome, simply decorated in dark and white wood. Asher greets me at the door. He ushers me quickly inside, then leads me to his living room, where Hammy and Roshan have already gathered. They stand up at the sight of me. Hammy hugs me. A second later, I glimpse others on the couch, too, from some of the other teams. Ziggy Frost, Abina Leah from the Cloud Knights. Tremaine is here as well, sitting noticeably apart from Roshan, but the two are turned toward each other as if they were talking a moment ago. The tension between them that I'd always felt seems lessened now, if not completely gone.
What do we do from here?
Hammy asks as we all settle. She's greeted by a long silence. I sit down, too. I run a hacked version of Warcross, I reply. I don't think I'm affected in the same way. Maybe I can figure out a way for you guys to have it, too. I tell them about what happened from the beginning, of Hideo hiring me after my first glitch, of my frequent meetings with him, of then realizing what had really happened when Zero appeared in the final game. I talk until the street lamps are lit, and Asher has to turn on the living room's lights. I saw him glitch into view, I finish, during the final moment when we all felt that static shock. It's the first time I've ever seen any data about him. Tremaine looks at me.
You saw Zero too? It wasn't just me?
The others chime in.
I saw him, Asher adds. He had an opaque helmet on, and a null name over his head. Black body armor.
Hammy repeats the same, as does Roshan. Everyone had seen Zero in that instant. That means that he had been exposed outside of my hack. That in that instant, all of his data had been exposed. All of his data had been exposed. Suddenly, I straighten and begin to type. I bring up my Warcross account, then my memory worlds. There is one memory in there now, my memory of the final game. I need to see something, I mutter, as the others gather around. I access the memory, sharing it with the others so that they can see what I see. The world momentarily vanishes, putting me back into what I had recorded. I see the start of the game, and then the bridges. The robots emerging from their hangars, the battle that ensued. I fast forward through all of it, all the way until the end. Then I let it play, until the instant the electric shock had happened, when Zero suddenly stood in front of me. I pause it. His data. I've recorded it. I can see his actual account. Ems, Asher says beside me as he watches the memory. Can you actually find out who he is now? With trembling fingers, I scroll through Zero's personal account. And sure enough, there it is. The trigger had exposed him, if only for a fraction of a second, but it's all the time I needed. I stare numbly at the account info that now displays before us, hovering in the center of the living room. There is a name, a real name, floating alongside a photo of the real-life user who is Zero. I don't even need to read the name to know who it is. Staring back at me is someone who looks like a younger version of Hideo. A boy who resembles how Hideo looked several years ago. A boy my age. My eyes go back to the name, unable to believe what I'm seeing. Sasuke Tanaka. Later that night, I leave the apartment to stand outside in the front yard. I need some air. The street lamps outside of Asher's home cast a lattice of light on the sidewalks, and I decide to concentrate on that, forcing myself to clear my mind and find a moment of peace. Then I look up, searching for stars. There are only a few to be seen from here, scattered dots representing the rest of the Milky Way, invisible without a virtual overlay. I don't care. For once, it's comforting to be seeing the real world for what it is, instead of the enhanced version through the Neuralink.
Sasuke. Sasuke.
Endless questions swirl in my mind. There is no way that Hideo knows about this. He would have mentioned it if he did. He might even have stopped his plans. But how is this possible? Sasuke had vanished so many years ago, taken by a nameless kidnapper. Why has he reappeared as a hacker, trying to stop Hideo? Why hasn't he appeared to Hideo himself, to reveal who he really is? Does he even remember his past life? Does he know that Hideo is his brother? Who controls him? Who does he work for? And why keep his identity a secret? Is he even real? I sit down on the curb and pull my knees up to my chin. What will this do to Hideo once he finds out? Would he stop if he knew? Do I even want him to stop? What is worse? A world where Hideo fights against violence, or a world where Zero fights using it? I wonder what thoughts are going through Hideo's mind right now. And it takes all my willpower not to reach out and link with him, to feel what he's feeling, to send him a message so that I can hear his voice. A message. I look back down at my phone, remembering the encrypted note I'd received earlier in the afternoon. A small voice in the back of my head still urges me not to open it, not to indulge whatever it is that Hideo might be trying to convince me of. But my finger still hovers over the message, and after a long moment, I finally decide to open it. It's not from Hideo. It's from Zero. My offer to you still stands. A faint ding rings out, alerting me that I've just downloaded something into my account. My hand freezes over the new files. They're my memories. My memory worlds. I let out a small gasp as I see one after another, the memories of my father that Zero had originally stolen, now blinking back into existence as if they had never gone missing in the first place. He returned them. My hand starts to tremble. Then I close my eyes and wrap my arms tightly around my legs, hugging them as if my life had been restored. When I open my eyes again, they are wet. My offer to you still stands. His offer? Why is he giving me back what he'd originally taken? How dare he pretend he's returning them as a gift, as if he's doing me some kind of favor? I picture his dark figure in that red cavern, his low, quiet voice. I picture the sheets of black armor encasing my arms and body and legs, turning me into someone else. Hey. My thoughts scatter at the greeting. I hurriedly wipe my eyes and turn my head enough to see that Tremaine has come to stand beside me. Hey. I mutter back, hiding my phone away. Tremaine notices my movement, but even though he casts me a brief, sidelong glance, he doesn't comment on it. Enough secrets have been revealed today. I was contacted by another bounty hunter, he finally says, stretching his arms over his head. The street lamps cast their light against his pale skin. I meet his eyes. One of Hideo's? He nods. I think I crossed paths with him when I was down under. He was sitting up with the avatars, watching the assassination lottery. If we work together, we can probably track our way to him, and he can help us. We're some of the only people in the world who both understand the inner workings of Warcross and also worked for Hideo at the same time. Zero's message echoes in my thoughts. I turn away again and nod, Then we'll go into the Dark World. We'll find a way to contact him. We can figure out a solution to this.
To stop Hideo? Tremaine asks. Or Zero?
I think of Hideo's intense gaze, his single-minded genius. I think of how he'd leaned his head weakly against me and whispered my name. I think of the way he looked up to the stars, searching for a way to move forward from his past. I think of the final words we'd exchanged. Then I think of Zero's surprised voice, his anger as he faced me in the final game, the way he'd stolen my memories, the way he'd returned them.
Everyone has a price, he'd said. Name yours.
Tremaine offers me his hand, and after a while I take it, letting him help me up. Then we continue to stand there, unmoving, looking out at the electric glitter of Tokyo. My boots pointed away from the house and toward the city. My heart suspended somewhere between one choice and another, unsure where to go next.
This is Nancy Wu. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of War Cross by Marie Lu. This program was directed by Paul Rubin, executive producer Sarah Jaffe. Text copyright 2017 by Shiwei Lu. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.